Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman. As we approach the end of 2015, it's natural to get a little reflective and look back at the year that's ending, and at the same time, to think about what's in store for the new year. So today, we're going to do just that. And since this is Money Talking, we're going to do it through a business lens. And with me to do that are Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine and Rob Cox with Reuters Breaking Views. And Rob, when you look back at this past year, what do you think was the most significant or at least the most interesting trend?
Well, this seventh year in which the Federal Reserve has had interest rates at zero is now changed. And I think so. Well, all of the things that we're going to see next year are a result of that 7 years. And a lot of it was baked in 2015. And so when you think about interest rates, it basically means the cost of borrowing. That is, whether you're buying a car and you want some money, whether you're getting a house, whether you're an emerging market that's trying to borrow money to build bridges, all of that's going up in cost. And I think that that's going to basically form all of what happens in 2016. And there are going to be a lot of trouble areas.
So that sense that things were not inexpensive, but maybe didn't cost as much as you're used to, or you know, my parents talk about in the 80s how their mortgage was up in, you know, double digits.
Right.
It's just we're not used to
We don't know. It hasn't really happened in the post-war period where you've had interest rates so low for so long that you don't really know what's baked in, right? Like there's this analogy people use to the boiled frog. So a frog is sitting in a pan of water, and as you slowly turn up the heat over time, frog's dead. Didn't know it was dying.
So the interest rates are kind of
interest
that
rates
heat.
Have been we have now turned up the heat in a sense, or let's say we're turned it down. We're now going to see how the frog looks around the world, and I think that's going to have some serious repercussions for giant economies, small companies, private companies, homeowners. Everybody.
There's an entire generation of millennials that really has never known anything but low interest rates and totally cheap debt. And I think they're going to have some behavior changes.
Well, so then, Rana, what are you looking ahead to, or what trends from 2015 do you think will carry forward into the next year?
Well, it actually plays off of something Rob just said. One of the effects of the period of really, really low interest rates was that share buybacks were at record levels.
So this is when companies go out and they basically buy back their shares. They purchase it back.
That's right. And, you know, on the one hand, this kind of theoretically sounds like a good idea. Oh, you have faith in your company, you're buying back shares. But what it amounts to in real life is that the very wealthiest investors, people that own most of the stocks, people in the C-suite, people like Carl Icahn, get a lot of money. And that means that money doesn't go to research and development or higher wages.
So in other words, the companies are not spending it to build a factory or development.
They're
by buying back the stock, there's less of it in circulation and that pushes the price up. And if you own it, suddenly a $10 stock is worth $20.
Exactly. It's kind of like an artificial sugar high. I mean, I have always thought that the Fed keeping rates this low for this long, as well as the program of quantitative easing, was kind of like a genetically modified recovery. Stock buybacks are like, you know, drinking a Coke really fast. It pushes the price of the stock up, but it doesn't actually create seed corn for future growth and higher wages, which is really what you need to generate a sustainable recovery in an economy that is 70% consumer demand.
Because that's the question I have looking into the next year, is whether or not we'll see, and we're seeing unemployment continuing to drop and get lower, but is this where it's going to actually stop, around this 5%? Level, when do we actually start seeing wages start to get better? When do companies take that money and instead of using it for stock buybacks this past year, are they going to use it next year to pay us more?
Well, I think next year they might be using it to do some mergers and acquisitions. I think that that's what you're already starting to see this year. Both of these things, share buybacks and M&A, are kind of financialized ways to create growth. They're sort of sugar highs for the market, if you will. And this is what companies have been doing with the money because it's easy.
The question I have, though, is if you have this money that you've gotten cheap and you've been doing stock buybacks and you're doing mergers, at what point do companies say, I'm going to invest in research, I'm going to build a factory, I'm going to maybe give us all a wage? And that's one of the things that this has been a really consistent story, that even as unemployment has dropped, we haven't seen people consistently making more money.
It's a huge thing. And frankly, it requires some big shifts in the tax code. I mean, right now we have a tax code that rewards debt, not equity and investment. That's probably not going to change in 2016, but I hope that in 2017, you might see some real tax reform in addressing of that question.
It is part of Jeb Bush's plan, for instance, is actually to reduce those incentives for companies to, and households to take on debt. I mean, in theory, that makes a lot of sense.
Because the incentive is it's like having a mortgage that you can write off the debt, that you have this incentive to actually take on the debt.
Right. And companies have the same thing. I mean, we give tax breaks for debt. And the idea is that debt helps to create underlying growth in the real economy. But that's not really what you've seen over the last 20 years.
Not if you're using that debt to just buy stock.
That's right.
No,
so, Rob,
how likely then, though, do you think that there'll be a policy change to change the tax code like that?
Well, there won't be in 2016, but it will be certainly part of one hopes it'll be part of the conversation when the Republicans finally have a candidate and the Democrats have put Hillary forward. I imagine you'll have a pretty robust discussion about how you do change some of these incentives.
Well, let me do a little speed round looking ahead to next year. So we always look at CEOs and how they're doing. Rob, Breaking Views recently did this sort of unscientific poll asking about CEOs. So who's most at risk next year?
Well, the overwhelming majority said that Marissa Meyer, I mean, she tops the
CEO
list by like two-thirds of everyone, so I thought she was the most likely CEO to lose her job. After that, it was the CEO of Volkswagen, Matthias Müller. And then you had like Ivan Glazenberg, who runs this huge commodities business, and then a few others. But basically, she is far and away the one everyone expects will lose her job.
And Rana, on this tech question, so many of them are worth more than $1 billion now, these unicorns that we talk about. Does that trend continue?
I don't think so. I think that the interest rate hike is the beginning of the end for, you know, kind of companies that don't have
the Ubers and the Airbnbs.
I mean, these companies, they all have the same business model. They go in and they try and take a monopoly share in the market. They push down prices. That's great for grabbing market share. It doesn't necessarily create profits. And I think that one thing investors and the markets are going to be looking for are real profits, not artificial ones in the coming year.
There's something like 144 of these unicorns, and like 40 of them have $1 billion valuation. So like it's all sort of it just shows you how kind of made up these figures are.
Feels like 99.
I get a sense.
But does it matter in the real economy? Does it matter to average listeners?
Of course it does. I mean, if you just look at how bubbly the tech markets have been for some time now, I mean, we're certainly due for a correction. It feels a lot like the late 90s to me.
Well, I want to throw out one final idea. Something I've been really interested in is whether or not President Obama, after the election, after everything is settled, decides to go to Cuba, to actually travel there to try and cement what he started in terms of defrosting the relations between the countries. I'm curious if either of you think that could be a possibility.
I don't see why he wouldn't do it. I'd rather see him go to Iran.
Rana?
Ooh, gosh. Yeah, politically, Iran would be a very bold move. But boy, if I had just been through the last few years that he has, I would want to retire to Cuba with a rum drink in my hand.
Well, Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine, Rob Cox with Reuters Breaking Views. Thanks so much for joining and happy holidays.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman, and this is Money Talking from WNYC.